Here we go. Our first shiur in Perek Eilu Metzias. It's October 18th, Or L'Chavtes Tishrei, if I'm not mistaken. And what I'd like to do, it's a beautiful Perek, and like all Prakim and Shas, it's different pieces. You get different pieces of the puzzle, and they start to fit together, and it's very gratifying. There are a number of concepts here that link together, and I'd like to try to cover some of the basics and some of the underlying structure and concepts of the Gemara. So let's just begin by reading the Mishnah. These are findings, objects that a person finds that are his, and these are the ones that he's obligated to announce. The Mishnah over here only addresses those that are his. The Mishnah on Chof Daladim and Beis picks up with those that you'll look in with me. The ones that he should announce. Eilu Metzias Shelo, these are the ones that are his. Matzah Peres Mifuzar, he found scattered fruit. Ma'os Mifuzaros, scattered money. Krichos Brishos Arabim, small bundles in Brishos Arabim. Vigule Dvela, and cakes of figs. It's round cakes of figs. Eagle is a circle. Kikaro Shal Nachtum, loaves of a baker. Machro, as opposed to a private one, which is more identifiable. Machrozo Shal Dogim, strings of fish, vachaticha shabasar, cuts of meat, vigize tsem halakuchin mimidinasan, shearings of wool that were bought. Now, mimidinasan, most Rishonim, including Rashi, translate as from the country, as opposed to having been processed. But it's a little bit of a strange terminology. It's a way of saying it's raw and not processed. The rush, both in the rush in the back and the tosas of rush, says it's actually a different word. There's a pasuk in Eov. There it has an ayin, but the rush is the same word that means tied. Haskasher, Madonos, Kima. There's a constellation, Kima and Ksil. It's a pasuk like, can you unravel? Can you untie? So there's a word, Madonos, which means ties. The rush, Alekuchen Mim Dinasa, means the way they come right out of the bundle. Ultimately, it means the same thing. It's something that doesn't have a simen, it's very common. But in terms of the exact translation, I think he found it difficult to say mimidinasan means coming from the country. That's a little bit of a strange way of talking. But most Rishonim do take it that way. Vanitze pishtan, bundles of flax, Lashonah shal argamon, tongues of purple wool, hare elu shalo, behold, these are his. Divrei Rabbi Meir is our version of the Gemara, of the Mishnah rather, although if you look in the Masoras HaShas, it says that in Yerushalmi and in the Rosh, these three words are not there. It's just, in fact, later in the Gemara, it sounds like these words shouldn't be there, because the Gemara just refers to this as the Tana Kama, not as Rabbi Meir. In any event, Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol Sheyesh Bo Shinui, anything that has something different about it, Chayev Lahachras, he'd be obligated to announce, Ketza, how so? Motza Eagle, if he found an eagle, which means a circle, Rashi says it's the same kind of eagle we were talking about before, a circular cake of figs. Motza Eagle of Esocho Cheres, he found a cake of figs and it has a shard in it. Kikar, a loaf of bread of Esocho Ma'os, and it has money in it. That would be something that Rabbi Yehuda calls has a shinoi. There's something different about it. What is the point of what Rabbi Yehuda is saying? There's a discussion a little later in the Gemara. Is this an issue of simen habame elov, a simen that wasn't placed there intentionally? It's not like you made a scratch or you made an indication that it's yours. The shard just fell in, the money just fell in. What's the status of an incidental simen, a simen that was not put there deliberately, or is it a simen that's easily knocked off? What the issue is discussed later in the Gemara. And finally, the last statement of the Gemara, of the Mishnah rather, B'Shem ben Elazar, Omer, B'Shem ben Elazar says, Kol klei an puria, ein chayev l'hachris. Any klei an puria, which Rashi says later means ein poraya, it has no proof. Ein chayev l'hachris, it refers to something that is not identifiable. Not only does it not have a simen, but it is so new and so unfamiliar to its owner that you wouldn't even be able to say, I recognize that. Which that was the subject of the whole opening shir that I gave, which is we have this concept that the Gemara talks about later, that a Talmud Chacham, even when he can't give a simon per se, he can't tell you it has a scratch 3 inches down from the top on the backside, but he can say, I recognize that, and he's believed. And we discussed the Machlokas Rishonim, is that only him? What about if you're talking about somebody else? The Ron holds that anybody could do that. I can say, I recognize that belongs to Eitan, and then you'd have to give it back. And the question is, why? That's only one witness, not two. Why do we have this exception? And we discussed the two approaches in the Achronim as to what the exceptional nature of Hashavas Aveda. Is it that really technically you should always give it back to anybody who claims it, and it's a stringency that you even have to check out that he's telling the truth, or is it the other way, or that you shouldn't give it back, or there's a leniency? That was the subject of our opening shiur, which really we'll come back to that subject later, later in the perek. So let me talk about the first tosis. I'm not going to read it inside, but I'd like to talk about it. I just want to mention, the Rishonim all say that when you look at this Mishnah, you have to look at it through the eyes of Abaya and Rava. Abaya and Rava is really the next sugya, is the big, big discussion about Yiyush Shalomidas. Yiyush Shalomidas means this is something that when he realizes its circumstance, he will give up hope. When he realizes that it's lost, he will give up hope of finding it, but he's not aware of it yet. That's called Yiyush Shalomidas. It's giving up, but without the awareness yet. That's a huge, huge machlokas of Abaya and Rava, and the proof's going on for a while, and then it ends up being one of the rare cases where we paskin like Abaye over Rava. But Yiyush Shalomidas, in order for something that you own to become mine through the mechanism of getting lost, you need two factors. It's lost, and you gave up. So what if you gave up, but what if you would give up, but you haven't yet? Rava holds that's valid. Abaya holds it's not valid. The Rishonim all say you have to read this Mishnah through the glasses of Abaya and through the glasses of Rava. It's interesting to me that the Gemara doesn't even just open up with that machlokas. You have to learn this first Amud of Gemara, and then you get to Yiyush Shalomidas. Really, everything that happens over here is interconnected with Yiyush Shalomidas anyway. So that's why I actually put on the list of Gemara Makonos, if you could cover the first Amud, just the very beginning of that discussion there, because you can't really understand anything that's happening in Eilam Metzias without the backdrop of that machlokas. So it's just interesting, by the way, the Rishonim say, according to Abaye, who holds that Yiyush Shalomidas, when he doesn't yet know, he will give up when he knows, but he doesn't know yet, that is not valid, which is actually what the halacha is. We follow Abaye. The whole point of most or all the cases in the Mishnah is to tell you these are things where he would be aware. If you found a cake of figs, you think the owner didn't notice that he dropped it yet? He did. You found a loaf of bread from a baker, you think he didn't notice yet? He did. All these things. What's funny is that in the Gemara, those are all posed as questions to Abaye. Abaye, you're wrong. Why are you allowed to keep it? He wouldn't know. And the answer is, Abaye would tell you that he knows. Which, when you read the Gemara, that's what we usually call a shinuya dechuka. It sounds like a forced answer. Mm-hmm. You could say this. But in the Rishonim, it's actually the other way. According to Abaye, that's what the Mishnah was telling you. That's not a forced answer. That's the whole point of the Mishnah, which is interesting. And we'll come back to that. But to discuss the first tosus a little bit. See, I told you it's all interconnected. I'm going to put the whole perek out there on the table, and then we'll play with the parts.
But then I really should have said, it's almost like the Mishnah is emphasizing whether it has a simon or not, as you yourself said, because it talked about klayam puri at the end. So it's the general rule about whether it has a simon or not. It never told you the general rule about whether it's something that a person would know right away or not.
Right.
It's missing from the Mishnah if you think it's that way.
Right, but they do say according to Abaya, that's the way he understands what the chiddush of these cases are. You're right. That's a har on Abaya. Yeah. I agree.
You said b'chol davar she'adam asui ladas.
Right, right. It's unspoken, right.
Yeah. And therefore you would never have yeish, according to Abaye.
What do you mean?
Because he would know, right? We say he knew about it. He knew. But is the assumption that...
He knows he never knows, he's me'ayish, right.
It's not, since he knows, does that mean we conclude that he's me'ayish?
Yeah, it's yeish me'das.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But that's an underlying assumption, right?
Yeah, these are things that do not have simanim, and therefore Abaye says, and I can assume when I find it that he knows that he lost it, and that's why you can keep it. According to Rav, it's the opposite. It's to show you that Yiyush Shalomidas is valid. How would he know? He wouldn't know about these things. So it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting machlokas. Now, the first tosos over here really is bringing up a different machlokas. This is a machlokas Rava and Rava, which relates to the case of krichos versus harab. The third case in the Mishnah is small bundles in a public place. In this chapter, public place doesn't mean like Chel of Shabbos, which mm-hmm. with huge amounts of traffic or wide streets. It means there's some degree of traffic. So small bundles in Rishus Harab. It stands out like a sore thumb. This is the only case where there's a distinction between Rishus Harab and Rishus HaYachid. Is it a place with heavy traffic or low traffic? We have other case. We distinguish between a loaf of a baker or a loaf from a household, where it's a difference about the nature of the item. But the only place where we distinguish between the nature of what kind of domain it's found in, what the nature of the traffic on the street is this. So that stands out. So in the Gemara, we find a very interesting machlokas between a rabba and rava. What is it? What is this variable of Rishus HaYachid versus Rishus HaRabim? Rava says, place, the location of an item, is also a siman. Okay, Mako might present the whole discussion later in the Gemara. Rava says, the location of an item is a siman. I can't tell you anything about its physical features, but I can tell you it was in the back corner there, next to the chair. So that's a siman. So Rava says that's why Rishus HaRabim is a variable. There's a lot of traffic. It's Fifth Avenue, and things get kicked. These are small bundles. They get kicked around. So you can't say, I know exactly where it was, because it won't be there. Or probably more accurately said, the owner would give up on any prospect of being able to identify where it was, because he will assume it got kicked out of its original location. That's how Rava learns it. And Rosh Hashayach, where there's low traffic, like Rashi gives an example, a planted field, so people don't walk through there. There's a little bit of traffic, somebody will notice it, but you don't have heavy traffic, so where you left it is where you'll find it, so he doesn't give up. That's all according to Rava. Rava says, Makom is not a siman. A siman means something about the nature of the item, not where it was, and therefore Rava has to understand the Gemara, the Mishnah, differently. Rava says it has a siman tied onto it. It has some kind of identifying feature, and since it's a small object that gets kicked around, it's called a siman ha'asu lidares, a siman that is likely to be trampled, likely to get kicked off, or has a good chance, a prospect of being kicked off. So Rava says the person gives up of any hope that he will be able to claim the object by giving a siman, because it probably got knocked off. So Rava says, siman ha'asu lidares, a siman that's likely to get kicked off, is not a valid siman, or again, more accurately said, is not a siman that the owner relies on, therefore he gives up, I'll never find it. Yeah, it had its string tied to it, but it got knocked off by now. That's it, I give up, it's lost. Rava disagrees with that. Rava said, if it has a siman, it has a siman. Why do you assume that a person gives up? Mm-hmm. Just because, but so that's what the variable is. Is it that it has a siman that's going to get kicked off, or is it that the location was the siman, and that's why he gives up, because it's no longer in the same location? That's the machlokas, Rava and Rava, two block from here. So Tosus wants to go through the Mishnah through the eyes of Rava and Rava. It's a little bit interesting that the Gemara didn't do this. But Tosus says, okay, I noticed that Krichos versus Rav, that's the only case where we distinguish between Rishus HaYachid and Rishus HaRabim. And he says, how would Rava learn through the Mishnah, and how would Rava learn through the Mishnah? Actually, in the opposite order, Rava then Rava. So I don't want to go through the whole Tosus. There are a few interesting points there, important points. But one point that Tosus makes is that according to Rava, that there is no siman on the bundle, but the siman is the location, the case has to be what's called derech hinuach. Derech hinuach means the person put it down and forgot it. Not that he doesn't have it because he dropped it and doesn't know where it fell out of his backpack, fell off his car. It's that he put it down and then he left. That happens all the time. People put things down and forget, and then they're gone. So it has to be derech hinuach. Which is really straight out of the Gemara. The Gemara at the bottom of Chof Gimel Amid Aleph, which is at the end of that whole discussion of Rav and Rava, says that the halacha is that way. That makom is a siman, the location of a place is a valid siman, only if it looks like it was placed there. If it looks like it fell, sometimes you can identify something that blew off, it clearly didn't fall, it clearly wasn't placed, then it's not valid. So makom is a siman, the location of something is a siman only if it's derech hinuach, if we can tell it was placed and not that it fell. So Tosfos has a problem. So the Baal Yad Tosfos say, so then other cases in the Mishnah, yeah, so you know, why not say that the Gulei Dveila, derech, a guy puts down a bundle and forgets it, a guy puts down a cake of figs and forgets it, or a Karos Shanachtim, or whatever. So why don't you have other cases where there's a difference between Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim? In a less trafficked area, Makom is a Simon. In a more trafficky area, it's not. And anything that you place down, location is a Simon. So why do you make it that only the small bundles have this variable and nothing else? So Tosfos comes to this conclusion, which is a striking one, that they're very heavy. They're very heavy, and it's just not common that a person wouldn't notice that he dropped it. All of a sudden, you know, getting better mileage, must have fallen off the car. All of a sudden, you know, they're so heavy, which is, it's very strange, because in the Gemara it doesn't seem this way, and usually small things are not that heavy. These krichos are smaller than other, but Tosfos comes to the conclusion, this is like a few lines into the narrow lines. Why, with regard to the bundles, do you assume the case? Does the Mishnah present, according to Rava, a case where he was put down, and the other things you assume they fell? Since they're heavy, it doesn't happen. It's just not a common case that the way this would get lost is that it fell. The more common cases, he took a rest, he put them down, and then when he got up to go, he forgot to pick them up. But very interesting. In the Gemara later, it doesn't sound like the Krichos would be the heaviest example in this Mishnah, but Tosfos makes that assumption.
But why don't? What? How does Tosfos understand if they're so heavy that he would notice if they fall? How does he not notice it now when he gets them and starts walking again?
Because he had too much to drink at lunch. I don't know.
No, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Why all...
Yeah, I think it's the sudden change. But I will concede it's an okimta, it's an assumption, it's somewhat dachuk. And the Pnei Yeshua makes the following point, which is very simple but profound. The Pnei Yeshua says, Tosfos is only forced into this pretzel, bending into the pretzel, because Rava is l'shitaso. This Rava, who holds that the case of Krichos is where the Makom is a Simon, is the same Rava who holds Yish Shalomi Das is Yish. So the Pnei Yeshua says like this. So supposing you're Tosfos and you're trying to figure out Krichos versus a Rabim, Makom would be a Simon, but that's only if it's Derech Hinuach, it's only if you put it down. So now, Why does this have to be a case where you put it down? So Tosfos has to come to this conclusion because they're very heavy and it would never happen that you drop it and not notice. It would have been much easier if we could make the claim that the krichos are actually very light. Mm-hmm. That seems more consistent with the way you view these krichos. So the Pnei Yeshua says, we certainly would have said that if we held like Abaye, which is how we hold the halacha, that Yish Shalomi Das is not Yish. Then we could have said very simply, the reason why krichos birshus harabim hare elu shalo has to be where you put it down, because if it fell, you wouldn't have noticed because they're so light, and therefore you can't keep them. If you're talking about a small bundle, and when you drop it, you don't notice, then according to the way we paskin, you can't tell a guy to keep it. The owner doesn't know. See, everything is connected. When you learn that on the bays here, all these cases we ask, how's he allowed to keep that? The owner wouldn't know. The answer, no, because since it's heavy, he knows. How's he allowed to keep the money? The owner doesn't know he dropped it yet. No, people check their wallets a lot. Each thing we keep asking, because it's valuable, he's always checking to make sure he has it. We keep having to come up with why. By the time you found it, don't worry, the owner noticed. So it would have been very, It would have been very geschmack to just say, with regard to krichos, the reason why you have to make a case where he put it down is because of the case where he dropped it. This would be the one thing that's so light that the guy didn't notice it, and then you can't keep it. So if I only knew Rava's shita on Chav Beis and Beis, if I only knew that Rava's the one who holds that Makom is a Simon, and that was all I had to deal with, I'd have a much easier way of working out Rava. Says the Pnei Yeshua, the reason why Tosos say what they say, which is somewhat of a forced answer to this assumption that the Krichos are so heavy, that's because Tosos knows that it's the same Rava who holds that Yish Shalom Midas is valid Yish. So according to Tosos, if this is a light bundle and it blew off your car and you didn't notice it until 3 hours later, that's fine, the owner can keep it. Because according to Rava, Yish Shalom Midas is valid Yish. So Rava Lashitasa, that's why Tosos is forced to say what they say, which is a simple point. But I think very important. You could certainly learn the Tosus 10 times and not realize that that's the Chejvon here. Now, one other point with regard to, one other piece with regard to Tosus. This afternoon I sent out this, it's the first piece in the Rishima Shiurim, Rav Soloveitchik Shiurim on Bav Metzia. There's a lot on this parak, by the way. It's a big, fat volume. I was delighted when I discovered that. There's so much on Eilam Metzius from Soloveitchik. It's great stuff. So the very first piece, Rav Soloveitchik made the following observation. I have a problem with it. Maybe you can help me. If you look in the Rambam, there's what one could view as a contradiction with regard to the validity of Mokom as a siman. In Parak Yud Gimel, Halacha Hey, of Hilchos Gzela Aveda, the Rambam says, Simanim Hamavhakin, real good Simanim. We'll get to that later, but it's like a real quality Simon. Somcha Aleim, Vedana Alpiyim, Bechol Makum Din Torah. They're totally valid, we rely on them, Min HaTorah. Vehamida, O Hamishkal, O Haminyan, O Makum Ho Aveda, Simanim Hamavhakin. The following are high quality Simanim, the highest quality. The measure, the weight, the number, if it's a numerable item, or the place of the lost object. So place is a siman muvuk, which he said, in all places, you can always rely on them, and he gives makom, location, as a siman muvuk. If you can tell me exactly where it was, that's a great siman. Then later, in Perek Tesvav,
that must be Mishasayach.
He didn't say that. Is that a valid diuk or not? See, in Perek,
well, otherwise he's going exactly opposite to Mishnah.
Only in this case.
I don't know if he's going exactly opposite the Mishnah.
Because the Mishnah said Rishasarav.
In Rishasarav. Yeah, okay. But I thought you guys. But what about Derech Hinuach? That's what I'm after. In Perek Tezvav Halacha Yud, Matza Krichos Rishus Hayachid. Right, now I think your point. So you mean it's already not. Already have to take it Lav Dafka because he doesn't mean Rishus Harabim. Let's see, Matza Krichos Birshus Hayachid, if you find small bundles in a private place, Im Derech Nafila Harei Lushala, if you can tell that they fell there, keep it. Im Derech Hanocha Chayv L'Hachris, but if it was placed there, then you have to announce it. And then there's a slight contradiction, he calls it not a Simon Muvik here, which the Nosei Kehle will go to town over, how to reconcile that. Some say it's there's an error in the Girsa, but Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, on the one hand, the Rambam says, Makom, you rely on in all circumstances. And over here, he says, you rely on Makom only if it's Derech Hanach, or Makom is a valid Simon only if it is Derech Hanach. So the way this piece starts is, Rav Soloveitchik says, if you look in Tosfos, you see that Makom location is only a valid Simon if the item looks like it was placed. Derech Hinuach, Derech Hanach. So that's a rule. In the Rambam, I'm getting conflicting signals. One place it sounds like yeah, one place it sounds like no. So Rav Soloveitchik apparently wanted to say as follows. There could be two ways you would explain why the location of an item that looks like it just fell there incidentally is not a valid siman. One is because I don't believe, the halacha doesn't trust that the person really knows where it was. And therefore, if he gives that as a siman, he got lucky. But there's no way you could have known that. If you're traveling on the turnpike 65 miles an hour, I think don't tell me you knew exactly which mile marker it fell next to. So even if you get lucky, that's it. It's not a valid siman. It proves that you're not to be trusted. The other way to take it is, no. All the halacha means is you can keep it, because if something looks like it fell, the likelihood that somebody would know the location, it doesn't have a siman on it. So what's the only possible siman? Where it's located. But look at the way it fell. What are the chances that something that fell like that the guy would know where it is? So I'm not obligated to be concerned for that. And therefore I can keep it. But he wants to say. But if something happens to show up at my door, I say, yeah, I noticed you have my suitcase. That fell, you know. And he tells me exactly where it was, so my jaw might drop, but I got to give it back to him. So he wanted to say, when the Rambam says that Malkum is a valid siman, he means if somebody comes to you and gives Malkum as a siman, it is always relied upon, even if the thing looks like it fell haphazardly. But the halacha that you can keep it is true, in that you don't have to be concerned for that. You're allowed to keep it. Which immediately probably makes you wonder, is there such a thing in these halachos where we tell you you can keep something, but by the way, somebody might knock on your door one day, in which case you have to give it back? So I think there are such examples. In fact, I think this is even a halacha. When we discuss that a Talmud Chacham is allowed to just say, I recognize that thing, it's mine, you have to give it back to him. So in a place where Talmidei Chachamim are common, this is the way the halacha is, slight machlokes about it, but a place where Talmidei Chachamim are common, so any item that looks like it's identifiable, even if it doesn't have a siman, but it looks like the kind of thing I could say, yeah, I recognize that's my shulchan aruch. How do you know? I don't know. It just looks like it. So you have to announce it. But if you're in a place where the talmidei chachamim are not common, not numerous, you're allowed to keep it. But, and I think the Bach says this explicitly, if talmidei chachamim comes over for dinner and says, I notice you have, you know, you have to give it back to him. So we do possibly have cases where the halacha allows you to take it because the likelihood that somebody would come with a siman or with a valid claim on the lost object are so small you don't have to worry about it. But you could have a reality where if that does happen, you'd have to give it back. So there could be such a thing.
What happens when two people say it's mine?
Oh, so that's a sugya later. Simonim b'si... Oh, two talmidei chachamim.
Yeah, that's mine.
Yeah,
that's mine. I think
that's yaniach. We even have it with simana. The Gemara discusses later. He gives a simana. He gives a simana. Possibly even different simana. They're both pretty good. You know, there's a scratch on the left side. There's some blue paint on the right side. You know, so then the halach is yaniach. I assume it would be the same thing where you hold it in escrow because you don't know what to do with it. In such a case,
but to get to Eitan's point about the from reading the Mishnah and Tosfos, it would seem that once it's in Rishus HaYachid, it doesn't matter. But the Rambam makes that meaning from the Mishnah, I can keep it when it's in Rishus HaRabim. Therefore, I can keep it if it's in Rishus HaYachid, whether it fell or whether I put it down. But according to the Rambam,
One second. Tosfos assumes that whatever case something is in the first part of the Mishnah, it is in the second part of the Mishnah. On Chofta al-Mavezi, you have the other half.
But the Mishnah says here, Kirkios b'Rishus HaRabim, right?
Right.
Is Elu Shela. Presumably then, Kirkios b'Rishus HaYachid is...
Yeah, it's explicit.
Fine. But the Rambam now, well, you just read us that last Rambam, right?
Right.
It says here... But the Rambam is making a diak in Rishus HaYachid, which it seems like the Gemara is not. Meaning from the Gemara, for Kikaros, it's Rishus HaYachid, Rishus HaRabim. For the Rambam, it's Derech Hanicha or Derech Nefila.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a Gemara. You look at the last three lines of Chof Gimel.
Right. That I'm there with you on that.
Yeah.
But... Right at the end. Right. But according to the Mishnah, just from the Mishnah's perspective, right, is making the distinction for Kikaros that it's a Rishus HaRabim. Meaning, if it's a Rishus HaRabim, then it's Elu Shelo. But if it's a Rishus HaYachid, right, presumably then all cases of Rishus HaYachid, whether it's Nefila or Hanicha, should be...
Even if I had no Gemara.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So
okay, well, we have the Gemara.
Right, but I guess I don't understand where. I mean, we didn't learn the sugya here yet. So.
Right. Once you have Rava who says the you have to come up with some reason why in Rishus HaYachid you machir. What are your machirs in Rishus HaYachid? According to Rava, there's no siman on this item. It's a small bundle, has no siman. There's 1,000 like it. So why announce it? So Rava says, Makom is the siman. For one second. It's clear from the Gemara, Makom is only the siman when
it... So then why, according to Rava, according to Tosfos' understanding of Rava, does it even matter whether it's Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah?
Because it gets kicked out of its place in Rosh Hashanah.
But if it's so heavy that I would notice it, they're going to kick it?
Yeah. Yeah, which is also interesting.
Isn't that like a defining characteristic of weight?
Yeah, it's interesting. Tosis is forced into a corner to say it's very heavy, but it's explicit in the Gemara that it gets kicked around, and that's why in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, according to Tosis, we're stuck with a very paradoxical item. You'd notice it immediately more than any of these other things as soon as you dropped it, so much so that you'd stop. See, the other things, we say the guy has already noticed that he lost it, but he would actually move on and wouldn't stop in his track. The krichos, he notices right away, and it just wouldn't happen. It's unlikely to happen that he would even move on. But then on the other hand, they're easily kicked around. In contrast to the other items in the Mishnah, which is...
But the Pnei Yeshua points out it's very difficult.
This way of understanding Rebbe is does become very difficult. But anyway,
that's for what you just quoted from the Rebbe.
Yeah.
The first time the Rebbe says that Makom is a siman, he just says stam. Makom is a siman. That meant Makom is a siman. If the Tanach Chacham comes over to you,
no, not Tanach Chacham. Anybody.
Anyone comes over to you and says to you, "I know it's, I dropped it a mile 35 on the turnpike," you have to give it back to him.
Right.
So. The Rav is saying that's a siman Rosh Hashanah Rabbim too, then.
Well, maybe.
So,
it's a good point.
So he's not only is it Kimi Derech Nefila, but Kimi Derech Nefila Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and it's a siman.
Yeah. What do you do with the Mishnah? I mean, how do you reconcile it with Chazal? You're right. I have to read the way they wrote it up here, but it does sound like that. If you want to really make the Rambam read well, that's what you'd have to say, which is interesting. He happens to be able to still identify exactly where it was. It fell and it was susceptible to being kicked around, but he still got it right. Yeah, maybe that'd be true. Yeah. What's interesting is the way Rav Soloveitchik presented it is it's a machlokas between the Rambam and Tosfos. According to Tosfos, Makom, when it fell haphazardly, is not a valid siman at all. You can't present it. And that was the first way I said that we don't trust you. If you say that, we think you just got lucky, but it can't be that you would know that. That's how Tosfos would hold, and the Rambam would hold. No, if you happen to get lucky, if you happen to know that, you're trusted. I'm not really sure what Rav Soloveitchik saw in Tosfos more than the Rambam, except maybe that Tosfos is working through the Gemara and talking about the case of Hare'ilu Shalo, and I guess he's assuming Hare'ilu Shalo means 100%. By the way, the Ritva, there's two Ritvas in Bab Metzia. There's what for years they thought was the Ritva, and then there's the newer one, the one that's quoted by Shita Mitzvah. The easiest way to refer to them is the old one and the new one. The one attributed to the Ritva. The old one is not the Ritva, it's not Rabbi Ben Yomtov Ben Onishvili, but it's a Rishon, and the newer one, they're pretty sure, is the Ritva. But the old one is the one everybody calls the Ritva in all the old Svarim, so I just call them the old and the new. In the, I think the old Ritvas, first thing he says, the reason why the Mishnah, why does the Mishnah just say, Eilam Tzias She'ein Chayev Lahachriz Ve'elu Chayev Lahachriz? The reason why it says Eilam Tzias Shalo is it means you absolutely own it. And that even if the guy will come and claim that's mine, you don't have to give it to him. Sorry, you were miyayish. That's my eyes. Which, if that's what he's seeing in Tosis, that we're calling this is what we're calling Shalo, then presumably the Rambam had to learn the Gemara also. I'm not really sure that you would see a machlokas Rambam Tosis here, but that's something interesting to think about. Whether there may be two different levels of what we mean when we say that a makom is not a siman when it's derech nefila. Let me move on to something else. In fact, let's see a little bit of the Gemara. It says the Gemara, Matzaperis mefuzarin, if he found scattered fruit. Asks the Gemara, Vekama, how dispersed? Amar Rav Yitzchak, this whole Gemara is a wonder. It's the eighth wonder of the world. Like sometimes, one of my rabbis once said, sometimes Chazal articulates things in such different terms, you wonder if you really ever fully understand what they're saying, because it's so interesting the way, when you unpack what's really happening here. But, all right, how dispersed? Amar Rav Yitzchak Kav Barba Amos. It's a kav measure of, we'll see, this is really, let's call it fruit for now, a kav of fruit in the area of Arba Amos, which presumably means 4x4 Amos. He asks the Gemara, Hechidomi, literally means like, how are we dealing? How are we talking? Iderach Nefila, if it looks like it just fell, Afila Tuvanami, even if there's more than that. You'd be allowed to keep it. V'iderach hinuach, and if it looks like it was placed, afila batzer mehalchinami lo. If it looks like it was placed there, then even if there's less than that, but it was placed there, and you can't keep it. He wants to come back and take it. You got to leave it there. So Amar of Ukva Barchama b'machnash to the Beit Daria skinan. Rav Ukva Barchama says, no, the case of the Mishnah is it's in the gathering time. Machnash is like the word Knesses, base Knesses. Beit Knishta is Aramaic for base Knesses, means a gathering. It's the gathering time at the granary. Askinan, that's what we're dealing with. Kav ba'arba amas de nafish tirchayu. A kav in 4 amas where it's a lot, their bother is a lot. It's to bend down and get it all is a lot. Lo tarach inish, person would not bother. Velo hadar asi v'shakalu, and he wouldn't return and come back and take them. And therefore, af kure mafkelahu, he would make them hefker. Butzer mehachi, less than this, tarach, he would bother. Vahadar asi v'shakalu, he would come back, he'd return and come and take them. Velo mafkelahu, and he would not make them hefker. Okay? So Gemara makes an okimta. So just a couple of things. First of all, the second toes on the page, which is not one of the ones I put on the source sheet, just points out, here's what happens to this Gemara. Somebody asks a question, a shaila, like, what's the case? And he gives an answer. And then the Gemara questions the whole premise of the question. Gee, how dispersed are these? This amount, this ratio. What are you talking about? It doesn't make sense to give a rate of dispersion. That's not the variable that matters. All that matters is whether it fell or whether it was put there deliberately. So Tosaf says, the question of Vekama must have been asked by Rav Yitzchak. In other words, he's making an assumption. Because otherwise, it doesn't make sense. If you ask me a question, I give you an answer, and then you start yelling at me, the question makes no sense. It's not the way that... Well, okay, so what do you want from me? So Tosfos shows actually another case in this parak and one elsewhere in Shas, where sometimes you have that where it's clear that even though we made it as if Rav Yitzchak was responding to the question, he really asked the question. He must be the one who asked it, and then we figure out because he's learning the whole case differently. He is assuming this is not a case of where somebody's walking down the street with a barrel of fruit and they spill. This is a case where somebody has a granary. And he already emptied it out, and there's a certain amount it's not worth his time to go back for. Now, why does Rav Yitzchak understand that to be the case? So again, if this page had been published before this page, we would know the answer, and that's because he holds, like Abaye, that Yish Shalom Das is not Yish. If a guy's walking down the street and he drops fruit, he doesn't know he dropped them. You found them 2 minutes later, how can the Mishnah tell me you're allowed to keep it? The owner doesn't know he dropped it yet. It's a Yish Shalom Das. So you might as well say, well, we already answered that, because that's not the case. It's not talking about that. It's talking about what's called an Aveda Midas. It's talking about where the guy knows it's there. I have a certain amount of grain, and at a certain point it's not worth my time to go back for it, and therefore it's Hefker. So it's just an interesting thing. To me, that in terms of the style of the Gemara, I think that's consistent with what the Rishonim say. Abaye held. See, you could ask a question.
So you're saying Rava argues with Rav Yitzchak?
Yeah. Rava wouldn't be forced to make this kind of strange okimta. I mean, go to any kid who just learned Mishnayos and said, what's Peres Mefuzaron? It's a bunch of oranges rolling down the floor. What? Peres Mefuzaron is a guy who's a grainer. First of all, Peres here means grain, which sometimes you haven't shown, but... it's a guy who's a granary, and it's unlike all the other cases where people left things, forgot things, drive here. It's something the guy knows about. It's my granary, and a certain amount I don't bother going back for. It's a totally different case. Rav would not be forced to make that kind of assumption, make that kind of okimta. Abaye does. See, I was wondering. According to the Rishonim, say Abaye, when Abaye looks at this Mishnah, he says the Mishnah is trying to show you all of these are things that people know about. He dropped a cake of figs. You think he doesn't know? He knows. He dropped money. He checks his wallet frequently. He noticed already. You can rely on the fact that he knows already. So what's with Peres Mefuzarim? Why is this case there? I think Abaye probably held that the Mishnah is so obviously trying to show you that these are all cases of Yish Midas. You can't possibly think that Peres Mefuzarim is a literal case of Peres Mefuzarim because it wouldn't fit in. That's why Rav Yitzchak comes with this abrupt vakama. We must be talking about a rate of dispersion, which is not relevant to dropping oranges. It's only relevant if your grain is left in your threshing floor and you want to see how much you'd go back for. That's why he came out with that very presumptuous Shiloh, because he's trying to make a point. To me, like that's a little bit the style of the presentation in the Gemara. But anyway, well, I just want to talk a little bit about Aveda Midas, which is very relevant to this.
Why are we bringing this issue of Tarach?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds different from everything else.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting that, right, if this is really the case, so, you know, you think about, like, he's collecting his granary and he says, ah, it's too much of a pain, I'm not going to do it. So then why do we have, like, mitzvahs of, like, shechcha? Right?
I think maybe some people are frugal.
But that's exactly the point. Like, on the one hand, the Torah is going to come out and say, well, if you forgot it, you know, you can't go back and get it.
Oh, you mean it to be automatically hefker?
Well, we have like we have beishech and leket, right?
Right,
right. And the Torah mandates that we give these.
So you're asking you shouldn't need to mandate it as a special mitzvah, it's hefker anyway.
Basically, we when we talk about how much has to be for you to invoke that mitzvah, right? It's much less than what they're saying here. So you're already telling me here in this case with the granary, it's all in one place. But it's too much of work for him.
Right. See, this is a very specific case. It's at the time when they would bring in the stuff. I don't know that this is... Leket is broader application.
Pay is different, but I'm saying... Just in light of that.
Yeah, I think this is a very... Right? This is a very specific case. In fact, from the series of shilas that make up the rest of the Amud and end up in a teku, you see it's very specific. So much that it's a little bit of a wonder how to understand what Rabbi Yitzchak was really saying. But it's a narrow case with an assumed hefker. So I don't know if we could generalize to all the other cases. But here's an interesting Rambam that everybody asks on the Rambam from this Gemara. And what I'm about to tell you really appears as two opinions in Shulchan Aruch. What happens if somebody does something that shows that he's just not careful with his property? Like, extreme negligence. Does that make it that you're allowed to keep it or not? That's a basic question. And that's two opinions in Shulchan Aruch. It's Machaber and Ramah, according to the regular approach to halacha. Svardim would not be allowed to keep it, and Ashkenazim would. If you follow the strict Svardim going with the Shulchan Aruch and Ashkenazim going with the Ramah. But what that really is a machlokas between the Rambam and the Tur and some other Rishonim. If you look in the Rambam in the 11th chapter of Hilchos, it's Yud Aleph. Listen to this Rambam. Ham Abed, and I'll show you where I'm circling back. And Babi made a ha'ara that maybe the ultimate answer to the following might make your question have a little bit of an answer. So Yud Aleph in Hilchos Gzeila Baveda. Ham Abed Ramonu Ladas, somebody who deliberately destroys his money, his property. Einis Kakenlo. We're not obligated to him, meaning we're not obligated to start returning it. Yeah, he throws his things out in the middle of the street. I don't have to start doing a show as a Veda. Ketzad. How so? He niach paroso berefes, she'en la delos, v'lo kashara. He puts his cow in a stable that has no door and he doesn't tie it. V'halachlo. And what happened? The cow left. I'm sorry, the guy left. V'halachlo. Hishlich kiso b'rshus harabim. He throws his money belt, his wallet out in the street in public place. V'halachlo. And he walks off. V'chol kayotze bazeh. Hareza ibid mamona ladas. Anything like that, that's an example of a person who squanders his property. But here's the key words. Va'afal pisha asr laroa davarze lito la'atzmo. Even though it's forbidden for the person who witnesses this to take it for himself, eino zokuk lahachzir. But you don't have to do the mitzvah of returning a lost object. Shenemar Asher Tovad Pralam Avid Ladait. Okay, so the Rambam's statement, even though you can't take it for yourself, he sort of says that as a Derech Agav, by the way, but that's the red flag that the Rishonim get upset by. If you look in the tour in Siman Reish Samach Aleph, which the Kesef Mishnah, which is Kesef Mishnah is the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo quotes Kosav Atur Alzeh Ve'ein Nira. The tour says that doesn't seem to be correct. Aveda Midas Heve Hefker. Aveda Midas is Hefker. Somebody who deliberately puts his property in such a way that it's going to get squandered, it's going to get taken, it's going to get ruined. That's Hefker. So the Shulchan Aruch defends the Rambam, and he writes it here, he also says it in Beis Yosef, V'das Rabbeinu, so how would the Rambam respond to that? Shebishvil shezeh eino choshesh lefakeach al nechasav lo nomar shef kiram. Just because this person is not careful with his property doesn't mean he declared it Hefker. There's some people who are reckless, there's some people who are irresponsible. Just because I was irresponsible didn't mean I wanted you to walk off with my things. You're right, I should be more responsible in life. My mother's been telling me that for years. It doesn't mean I want you to take my stuff. It doesn't mean halachically it becomes ownerless. I didn't declare it Hefker. So that's
it's not true da'at if it's negligence, right?
Right. So, but the others, that the Torah seems to be saying, no, that's an act. When you do something that's going to precipitate that, it's going to get ruined, that's an act of making it Hefker. And the Rambam saying, no, it isn't. So this says, just because he's not careful with stuff doesn't make it
which example do they give? Do they give the example of the cow that didn't lock up? Or they give the example of the money threw into the rough?
Those two.
Those are two very different examples. One is just negligence, and the other one is literally
throwing
your money out the window.
Right. You're right. The money sounds worse. But I guess the money is also, I'm hoping to come back. I'm risky, you know. No time to put it in my pocket. You know?
Right. I mean, you could argue that, like, if somebody goes and gambles it immediately.
Right.
Does that mean he's making it Hefker?
If you double park on the side of the street and you leave your car running and you won't run inside for 5 minutes, does that mean someone comes to steal your car?
And you're going to say what neighborhood, you know.
Yeah, but like,
some people live on the edge. Yeah, I'm hoping it'll be there. Oh, rats. So what he's saying is that doesn't mean I made it Hefker. It means I live dangerously. It doesn't mean I made it Hefker. It's interesting. If you look in the Poskim, like if you look in the Shach and Shulchan Aruch, when they respond to the Beis Yosef, they say, we think you misunderstood what the Tor meant. What did the Tor say? He said, Aveda Midas Heve Hefker. And Shulchan Aruch says, not true. Just because you deliberately are risky doesn't mean it's Hefker. Says the Shach, he didn't mean in logic. He didn't mean, you know, conceptually somebody who lives on the edge is. He meant, if you look in Shas, he meant halachically, look at the cases. And there are a few, I don't want to get into all of them, but look in the cases, the way the Gemara treats it. I wasn't shooting from the hip on this. I wasn't, Svaros von Boich, just ideas from your stomach. I was coming from the cases. So one of the cases they ask from, the Bach and Simon Reish Ayin Gimel, asks on the Rambam, he says, what about Machnash de Vedari? What happens on our Gemara? They said, we can't figure out what this case is. What are you talking about? Oh, we're talking about the threshing floor. A certain amount he won't go back for. And what does the Gemara say? Therefore, the Gemara used the words afkure mafkir, because it's not worth his time. It's too much effort. Therefore, it's Hefker. We don't mean that we hear. Heard him announce over a megaphone. I hereby declared Hefker. We mean from the circumstances. We can assume it's Hefker. So you see, the Gemara treats it that way. And by the way, on Amud Beis, the Gemara even uses the terminology. The Gemara is going to say, in this machlokas, yeah, shalom midas. Hey, what about the fruit? The guy doesn't know he dropped the fruit yet. And the Gemara is going to say, I already told you, that's not talking about fruit, that's talking about the guy's threshing floor. And it's where it's not worth his time to go back. The aveda midas, it even uses this term. That is an aveda midas. So ask Sabach, ask a number of different mefarshim, and it's Reisha and Gimel as Dalit. What does the Rambam do with machnash de Beidari? So, some want to say this is a regular circumstance. I mean, when there are recurring circumstances, not atypical ones, Chazal can make an assumption. you know, everybody who's got a granary eventually empties it out, and we can make an assumption how much would a person go back for, and the rabbis can establish. People who throw their wallets into the middle of Broadway, that's not, you know, a recurring. So maybe it's different. I'm going to say answer like that. But I want to tell you what the Ketos HaChoshen says as an answer, and this will be our segue into what I hope will be the next major sugya. I didn't get to talk about, we'll see, maybe we'll touch on one other thing, but this is important. This will be recurring in the sugya of Yehi Shalom Hidas, and this is the real meat and potatoes of it. And this will be an introduction to Yehi Shalom Hidas, and it'll also answer our question, so it's a nice bridge. The sugya of Yehi Shalom Hidas works with the basic premise that you need the yish to have already happened at the time when you find the object. You're walking down the street, and you find an object, and Abaye and Rava argue, we know he's going to be miyayish later. The question is, can we assume that that's halachically considered as if it already happened? Rava says, yes, since he'll give up later, it's as if it already happened. Abaye says, no, he hasn't given up yet. So much so, by the way, that the Shita Megabetz has asked the question, why isn't that the same question of Breira?
Right, Breira, just
thinking that. It's funny, there's a short little Ravid quote in the Shita Megabetz. He said, one can ask, why isn't this the same Machlokas Breira? V'yesh lenovon lefalgina bidvarim. And somebody who's smart can distinguish between the two. So the Yimashach Chachal Arso Meach in his Chedushim writes, Afki le binas nivonim lo vigan. Even though I haven't reached the level of having that kind of bina, but here's what I would say. But that's what it looks like. It looks like a retroactive clarification. Breira is when you decide something later, does that indicate what you were thinking originally? On Shabbos was my tchum. Was I going to go this way or that way? So whichever way I end up going, that's what I was thinking at the beginning of Shabbos. Right? Breira is retroactive clarification. It's the most polysyllabic word that a fifth grader knows who learns one of those mesechtas, because the only way to say it in English is retroactive clarification, so that's what Breira is. But anyway, that's what Yehi Shalom Midas seems to be dependent on. Rava says, since you're going to give up later, it's as if it's now. Abaye says, well, it hasn't happened yet, so it's no good. But they're both working with the assumption that in order for Yehi to be valid, it has to be that by the time you picked up the object, the guy had given up. The question is, why? You lost something, I found it. Right now, we only have one ingredient to transfer it to my property, the fact that you lost it. I need a second ingredient. The second ingredient is yish. 2 days from now, hey, where's my money? Oh, I lost it. Shucks. Vayla chesaron kis. So you have a yish later. Why doesn't that work? Now we have both criteria for it to become mine. What is that big assumption that it must be that the yish happened by the time you found it? So the Gemara uses a phrase, you'll see it on Amud Beis, and you saw it already, that's bi'isura asaliyadeh. The problem is it came to your hand in Isser, in prohibition, forbidden. So there's a machlokes between the Ramban and Tosos, what that means. For our purposes tonight, they're similar. For future purposes, they're very divergent. But the Ramban says as follows. When you pick something up to do the mitzvah HaShabbos Aveda, you're a law-abiding Jew, you've lost object on the street, so great, it's a mitzvah in Parshas Kisetzeh, I'm going to pick it up, I'll do whatever the rabbi tells me to do now. You are like a shomer for the owner. It's like you're a watchman for the owner. You're in his employ. Some guy out there, somebody lost this. I picked up the object and I'm going to give it to the owner. So it's like you're working for him. Mm-hmm. So if he is now miyayish, now even though he has no idea where it is, he's frantic. He lost his gold watch. He's upset. But the reality is that somewhere out there is a guy who's working for him. You as his shomer, you're like his pocket. It's like it's in his bank account. It's like it's in his possession. So yish, when it's in your possession, doesn't work. Right? Like, you know, where are my glasses? Oh, I lost my glasses. You know, they're right there on my head. That doesn't work. You have it. You may don't realize you have it, but you have it. So if somebody's working for you,
it's
like it's in your rishus. So much so that they ask certain questions. In other cases, it seems like that's not true. But that's the basic idea. The way Tosfos in Bava Kama Daf Samachov says it is, the fact that the guy has the mitzvah HaShavas Aveda blocks the yish from working. Some it's either the fact that he's working for you and therefore he's like your shomer, or because he has a mitzvah to be working for you, but it's something along it, one of those two explanations. So the Ketos HaChoshen wants to say like this. The Rambam says, Aveda Midas, you can't keep. you don't have to do a Shabbos Aveda, but you can't keep it. Oh, everybody gets angry at the Rambam. What are you talking about? Machnash the Beidari. We have a case right here in the beginning of Eilam Metzias where the guy, because the guy doesn't want to go back for it, you're allowed to keep it. Eilu Metzias Shalom, Matzah, Peres, Befuzar. What's done? These are things you can keep. The case is the guy doesn't want to go back for it. So the Ketos HaChosh says, no, you misunderstood. It is similar to the other cases in the Mishnah in the following way. What's the problem in other cases? What's the problem when the Yish only comes later? The Yish is too late. Right? So what if the Yish is too late? By the time there's Yish, the finder is working for him. By the time there's Yish, the finder has the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. I was walking down the street, I already discovered your thing. 2 days later, when you give up, I'm already doing a mitzvah, I'm in the process of doing a mitzvah, or I'm already holding it for you, and therefore Yish doesn't work. That's only, says the Ketos HaChoshen, when I have the mitzvah to give it back for you. I am only your shomer, in the Ramban's terminology, or I am only doing the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda when there is, in fact, a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. But a person who's ma'abed mamono ladas, he squanders his money. I don't have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. That's what the Rambam said. Ein nizkakin lo. A guy who squanders his own property, you don't have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. In a case where you don't have the mitzvah Shavas Aveda, the Yish can kick in later. Yish only doesn't work once it comes to your hand if you're working for him, if you have the mitzvah of returning it to him. But in a case where you don't have the mitzvah to return it to him, then the subsequent Yish does in fact work. So he wants to understand the case of Machnash de Beidari. That stuff is sitting there in the granary. It's on the floor there. I don't have a mitzvah to give it back to him because it's the kind of thing he doesn't care about. He's not going to come back for it. It's of a quantity and a dispersion that he's not going to come back for. Therefore, it's Aveda Midas. Aveda Midas, I don't have a mitzvah to return it. Oh, I don't have a mitzvah to return it? So then the subsequent Yish, so maybe it happens only a little bit later, that Yish will work. That's what the Ketos wants to say.
Why do you even need Yish?
Right. So I had the same problem.
Like once you mix a hefker, you don't. It's, I mean,
right.
Yish doesn't
what's strange about that is, I think most of us, we read the case of Machnash Beidari, it just means the guy's not going back for it. That's it. The story's over.
He doesn't know what happened.
Huh? But it's his granary.
He was processing the grain. He doesn't even know that he left that grain in the floor.
Okay.
So if the amount that he doesn't know about is less than that, then if he would find out later, he wouldn't.
So that's what it means. If you look at some of the cases later, when something is part of an assumed system, they don't seem to treat it as let me do. I think what you're saying, he has workers. He doesn't know exactly when things get left. So since he doesn't have because of the asynchrony of the of his knowledge and what's happening, you're calling that Shalom Midas. I think if you look in the cases later, I don't think Chazal usually treat that. As Lummi does, it's strange. It makes it nice because it makes this case more similar to our subject matter. But yeah, some
the
of
the problem also with that assumption is then how would he know what's left?
He's
never going to go back.
No, but we have a shiur. We know that if you would have told him you had four kav in this per mouth, he wouldn't have gone back anyway. So therefore, the mafreya he's miyayish.
Right.
That's how we
read the. But I don't know why you have to invoke. That he's miyayish once you assume that it's hefker.
Right.
Assume it's hefker, it doesn't matter if he's miyayish or he's not miyayish. Once it's hefker, anyone can take it.
Yeah, it's very strange because it means the way you read the Gemara is because it's so dispersed, it's not worth his effort. Afkuri mafkelu. And what you really mean is, and there's another step. You can take it now, but you can't own it yet. You got to wait till he becomes aware and is miyayish, and then you own it. That's not what the words sound like. It's a little bit of a strange way to understand the case, but I thought it was a good way to get out to the Machlokas Ramban and Tosfos and how to understand.
So what would the Rambam say? You have to, you give it to Beis Din or something? You can't use it.
Yeah, I don't know what you do
with
it.
You don't have to declare it, so what do you do with it?
Yeah, I don't know what you do with it. I don't know what you do with it.
What can't you use? Stuff in it I'm threshing for?
Whatever the case is, whether he throws his wallet out, his cow, whatever it is, you can't use the cow. You see the guy opens his pen, doesn't have a door on his pen, and walks away. The cow walks out. Right? The Rambam says you can't go then and take his cow and say, this cow is now mine and I'm going to use it and milk the cow and work the cow and whatever you want to do with the cow. right?
The Rambam says you can never take it.
But he says.
Just what do you do with
return
it? You don't have to return it, but you can't keep it. So what do you do?
What do you do with it?
Walk away. Give it as a present.
I mean, I imagine you'd give it to Beis Din. I think that would be that would be the most likely.
Right. It's not like a Yehemunach case. I don't know.
But I don't know. I'm just curious.
We'll see later. So if Nim assures I didn't, sometimes to give something back even when you're not obligated to.
Right.
Probably just walk away. All right. There's a little more I wanted to cover, but I think we're a little over time. I do hope to get into the sugya of Bisura Asli Yada. I didn't get to that whole series of questions. It's somewhat enigmatic what Chazal understood Rabbi Yitzchak was saying and what they thought he wasn't saying, and is therefore an open question which we don't have the answer to. And what's amazing is that Tosfos has a way of looking at the question, which basically is that half a kav and two amos, or two kav and eight amos, we're talking by two by two, and eight by eight. So we're not. It's not proportional. Yeah, to me that actually seems like a very compelling shot. None of the other Rishonim say it, but if you understand it that way, Rabbi Yitzchak gave a ratio which works at any amount. But the question was, when it gets smaller, will you sell for less? When it's bigger, will you? But the other Rishonim don't understand it that way, and they understand Rabbi Yitzchak was not giving us a ratio. Rabbi Yitzchak was really just giving us something that works at four amos, which is a little hard to understand. So it's a little more, it's a little less. But anyway, we'll come back to that next time. Okay, thanks.